friends, welcome to Winx Neighborhood. I'm your host, Varsha Vaishampayan, and I'm joined by my co-host and friend, Rupa Bhandarkar. Our guest today is Gazelle Johnston. As a founder and principal of June Solutions, Gazelle specializes in purpose-driven businesses as well as companies focused on solving societal issues that disproportionately affect the lives of women and minorities, a mission that is very close to our hearts. Gazelle was an MD at Accenture. There was a pivotal moment in her life where she says there was a second chance waiting for her to do something different, and she became a COO for a startup called Daymaker. She says, being an immigrant family, you do not have that social capital. You know that no one will ever owe you anything. You have to keep trying your best every time and get it right on your own. Being a first-generation immigrant myself, I fully agree with this. During our fun-packed conversation, we also asked Gazelle how to restore trust once it's shattered. I heard this expression before, that trust arrives on foot but leaves on horseback. In other words, building trust can take a very long time, but breaking it can happen in an instant. Gazelle's advice is to own your mistake and be honest. Highlight for me for this episode was Gazelle's experience with startup and working with next generation leaders. She says younger generation leaders bring ideas, innovation, and creativity, while generation older than them, which I call my generation, baby boomers, who can bring decades of experience, and together we can do something cool. I'm all about something cool. So let me stop talking and let's listen to Gazelle's passionate journey. And let me warn you that this might feel like your story. So without any further delay, ladies and gentlemen, we welcome Gazelle Johnston. Gazelle, welcome to Winx Neighborhood and Showing Up as a Leader podcast. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this time we get to spend together.
Yes, and thank you for making the time to be our guest at the podcast. Gazelle, today I want to kick this conversation to talk about trust. You know that Winx for Growth is a women's leadership development program. And trust and building trusted relationship is such a core at the mentee's learning experience here at Winx. And the importance of building trusted relationship for leaders has been talked a lot about. And it is very important, yet it's very delicate. It takes years to build the trust, but it could take moments to lose it too, right? What's important that you can gain the trust, you can build it, but hopefully if there's something happens and you lost the trust, you can regain it too. And that's what I want to talk about today, Gazelle. What's your advice? So it's a two-part question. What's your advice to be able to build those trusted relationships in your career, specifically in a professional setup? And then if you felt that you lost that trust for whatever reason, how do you build it back?
Yeah, no, it is a really important element of work dynamic, personal dynamics, all of these kinds of things. A lot of times trust is really at the core of it. In my experience, I think trust oftentimes gets built when you least recognize that it's happening. So it's basically happening almost behind the scenes, because what you're doing is you're showing up, you're being yourself, you're being honest and true. You're showing up in those harder moments where it might be more difficult to dig deep and find the right words to approach a difficult conversation, or to find grace for another person because of something that might be happening in their life. And I think when you start showing up, and you're, you know, leading with your heart in many ways, and you're being honest, and you're really setting the right intentions in every single experience that you're getting ready to go into, and you're setting those intentions with a very clear heart and a clear mind, other people will begin to feel that you're being authentic, that you're worthy of trusting, and that you're someone that they can work with and collaborate with and get into the trenches with. And that trust kind of forms, it does form over time. And I totally agree that it doesn't necessarily come overnight. It sometimes comes after multiple interactions. And I think it's sometimes you look up and it's there and you don't necessarily always know that that's going to be the case. And I remember, you know, early on in my career, actually it wasn't even early on in my career at Accenture, I was probably about the year before I was up for promotion to managing director. And I was talking to one of my mentors about what I needed to do and setting goals for the year and the things that were really going to be relevant in order to position me for promotion. And he looked at me and said, you know, when it comes to creating room for you and the partnership, there's two things that we're really looking at. One is, can we trust you with our business? And the second one is, do you have the metrics to back it up? And you have the trust. You have been here working, bringing it every day, showing up, and we trust you. This year is all about the metrics. Like, let's make sure that, you know, you're working and doing the things you need to back it up in order to demonstrate that you've got the skills and the experience and the credibility and all of those things in order to back it up. But the trust is really the element and the first and foremost element of what it takes in order to kind of get that advancement in your career, in order to have people want to bring you along. And in my experience, a lot of times it really just comes from showing up and being honest and not necessarily trying to, you know, fabricate it, but rather set the right intention and then follow through on it.
Yeah. And also maybe show what you're capable of doing, right? In your case, they said that you build the trust, but they probably also know that you are able to build the business because you had a great track record.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, a lot of times I think when we start getting into the weeds and we don't necessarily pick our heads up a lot in order to kind of take stock in our accomplishments or the things that we've achieved, we're supposed to do. We need to do that because a lot of times it's those accomplishments or those achievements or those checks on the list that allow others to be able to recognize that good work has happened and that as a result, you're ready for that next opportunity. You're ready for that next challenge. And whatever might lie ahead, there's others that know that you've been here before and are ready to for whatever is going to come next.
Exactly. And second part of my question, Gazelle, is that as hard as it is to build a trust, it can also be lost. And sometimes you realize your mistake, but it's late. Can the trust be rebuilt?
I think so. I mean, I am also a very optimistic person. I think there are far more good people in this world than anything else. I think every single person has so much goodness to them. I think part of what it takes when the trust is lost is to own it, to acknowledge and recognize where you've gone sideways, what has gotten in your way, what is it that's really creating some fear within you that is then driving you to do something that's not true to yourself, that's creating that skepticism others now have in you, and really examine that. I think self-reflection oftentimes gets overlooked as being the number one tool that we have in order to progress in our own development. And I think when that trust is lost, it's oftentimes because of something we're struggling with internally that we're scared of, we're ashamed of, we're embarrassed by, whatever it might be. And we need to really think about what that is and then own it and rectify it and work on it and be honest and vocal with people. Because I think the more you try to hide it or come up with excuses or blame, it's just going to take a lot longer to ever make any progress. And frankly, I don't think the trust ever comes back because we inherently want to connect with one another. And if we feel like we can't have that connection's not no longer there because the trust is gone, it's not just going to come back by a virtue of time. It's only going to come back because we've been intentional on how we've wanted to make that happen again.
So true. And having the courage to own it, whether it's fear, shame, guilt, mistake, I think it's only going to further strengthen that trust that probably was broken. So very, very well said. I think it's owning it that counts. Gazelle, you mentioned, you know, a little time earlier in career. We're going to take you a little bit further back, you know, to your childhood, perhaps. You immigrated to this country from Iran at the age of 2. And, you know, just wondering, what influence did your upbringing have in terms of how you evolved as a leader?
Oh, wow. Rupa, you're going to make me kind of tear up. You know, it had such, first of all, you're right. I did. My family came to the States when I was 2 years old. I have 2 older brothers. So we settled in New Jersey and I had a opportunity to grow up in a really great community. And we were an immigrant family. We grew up in a household where multiple languages, you know, there was English was not the only language that was being spoken. And I think that when you grow up, or the way I grew up in the community and the way we grew up, like I watched my parents work extremely hard. They sacrificed a lot in order to provide their children with education and opportunity. And to them, education was the single most important gift they could give my brothers and I. And they worked extremely hard to make sure that nothing was going to get in our way of being able to overcome any challenges or anything that would prevent us from getting the best possible education we could get all the way through college. And through that, they also instilled in us, you know, my dad said early on, no one ever is going to owe you anything. It is up to you to basically create your own path. I don't know if I fully agree with him now because I've had the opportunity to be around, of grow up in a very different way than what he was doing at the time. But he was right, where he was bringing us into an environment where we didn't have deep set, you know, connections in the world that we were living in. We didn't have people we could call for interviews, or we didn't have social capital the way that people have social capital now in the world that I oftentimes operate in to be able to navigate. And so without that social capital, we were kind of left to figure some of that out ourselves. And he made that very clear to us so that we knew that that was something that was instilled in us in terms of having to work through it. One of the other big lessons that he also really instilled in us is always choose to do what is right over what is easy. And when you are, I think, growing up in an immigrant family, and you're watching your parents work hard and they are trying to do the right thing time and time again and not cut corners because they want to really get it right. They really want to get it right. And as a result, we end up getting a lot of those really great habits and those traits to be able to say, you know what, we want to get it right too. And we want to be able to, those are the things I want to, I guess, hand over to my children as well. Like, we want to be able to work hard. We want to be able to provide for our family. And we also really want to do it in a way that is true and honest and not necessarily cut corners. Because at the end of the day, when you do, it doesn't really serve you. So yes, they're extremely important figures in my life in terms of helping me recognize and prioritize what's important. And I owe them everything.
You made it without tearing up, Ghazelle. I almost teared up myself. Thank you for sharing that. Such amazing life lessons they instilled and the kind of hard work, the work ethic that they instilled that I'm sure, you know, has helped you throughout. Thank you for sharing that.
And that's the best part of our podcast. Rupa and I enjoy this personal stories, right? Who makes you who you are today? And they're always about moms and dads or somebody from the family. And we often don't think about them enough, right? So it's really good to hear that. Now, taking this to the next step, my husband is a handyman when he's not working on Wall Street. And he carries this big, huge toolbox with him wherever he goes, in the car, in his office. And inspired by that idea, I thought that I should have my own leadership toolbox, right? So I can put the tools in the leadership toolbox and take them out when I need it. So the important thing I learned throughout my time, that what will I need from that box and when? So bringing that over to you, you spent 19 years, I think, at Accenture being a managing director there. And then sudden switch, you become CEO for Daymaker as a startup. How did you know you're ready? This is what you wanted to make such a pivotal decision in your life.
Yeah. So it was really interesting. A couple of things I would first kind of preface that with is when I left Daymaker, I had no idea what I was going to go do. I had no idea what I was going to go do. I had an amazing career at Accenture. I still believe Accenture is one of the greatest places to work in the universe. I tell people all the time when they ask me if their kids are in college and they're contemplating careers, I'm like, well, you know, they should look at Accenture. I think it's just, it's a great career path. It's a great place to learn. It's a great place to meet people. And as I was kind of getting into my last year at Accenture, my dad was pretty sick and he ended up passing away. And like everybody does, typically when you have a major life moment, you stop and start to reflect a little bit and you ask yourself some harder questions about what else do I really want to accomplish? And what else is it that I want to kind of go do with my life? And I knew I wanted a 2.0. I knew there was a second chapter to my story. I now know there's multiple more chapters to my story, but in that moment, I knew I wanted to go do something else. I also knew that I needed to take a step back in order to do it. And I never wanted to leave at Accenture at a time when I felt down or disappointed or wasn't my best. I wanted to leave Accenture at a time where things were really good. And I actually feel like I left at Accenture at a high point in my career. I left at a place where I really feel very indebted to the firm for a lot of what it did for me professionally and personally. And I wanted to leave on that high point. So when I left, it was, hey, let's just take it a step back. Let's be present for a while. And let's figure out where and what you want to kind of go do next. As it's just so happened, as I was leaving Accenture, my husband ended up running into a couple of founders of Daymaker at a startup competition that he was judging. And he came back from it and said, hey, I met these guys. They created this platform that's facilitating online giving. They're really smart. I think you would enjoy working with them. I actually think my husband was secretly worried that I was going to leave Accenture and then the next day be curled up in fetal position, not knowing what I should go do. And he was panicking. And he's like, I got to go find her something to do before she totally goes crazy. So basically just said, hey, I think you should talk to them. They're in a pilot phase right now. They were actually all seniors in college at the time. And said, I think you should go talk to them. I think that there might be an opportunity for you to help them out. And so when I met with the founding team and I learned more about what they were doing, all of my kind of initial thoughts about be present and take a lot more time and just let it kind of be kind of went to the wayside a little bit because I was like, wow, this is so exciting and it sounds really fun and I want to be a part of it. And in some ways, I feel like it was waiting for me. And when I didn't really know it was waiting for me. So The transit was nothing I really planned, which I think also is one of the cool things that happens in life sometimes. Really great things happen when we least expect it. And so it was an opportunity for me to go into a very different environment and be part of something as it was growing and bring to the table a lot of what I had learned in my, you know, previous career and see what would happen. It was kind of a fun way to transition, nothing I'd really planned on necessarily, but I'm very grateful that it happened the way it did.
Awesome. That's an awesome story. And definitely you were at the high point at Accenture, and there would have been multiple more high points given where you were, Zill, and the trajectory that you had. But, you know, just continuing somewhat on that, clearly now there's a ton of talk around, you know, men as allies. Mm-hmm. And I know, Zill, you've been an ally yourself even before this was talked about more broadly. Right. And I remember distinctly a very senior, male senior executive telling me once that he greatly regarded the counsel you provided and how you helped him with certain blind spots that he may have had managing people or during the regular course of business. It's a distinct memory I have in terms of, you know, how much he missed your counsel once you were gone. You were clearly an ally to a number of leaders, and you continued your allyship along other dimensions as well. As a woman of color yourself, and today happens to be International Women's Day too, as we are recording this, what is your advice to people in general in terms of how can there be better allies, and particularly to women of color?
Thank you for that story, Rupa. That made me feel really good. Rupa, that's twice you almost made me tear up today. I'm just saying. No, that's good. That's good. I love the emotions. I think it's interesting. I was recently asked something along the lines of what I actually think is one of the strongest or most important qualities for leaders. And I actually, what jumped in my mind quickly was something in the context of what's important when it comes to showing up for other people, being there for other people, aligning to them, collaborating with them, being their ally. And I kind of view that as one of the most important parts of being a leader is how do you serve as an ally and supporter for others? And especially when I think about women, people of color, people who are oftentimes, you know, not necessarily given any of the same opportunities for a variety of reasons. And I think part of it starts with empathy. And I think that empathy has two folds to it. There's obviously this element that we all kind of hear about, which is recognizing how to put yourself in someone else's situation and all of that. The other part of empathy, which is the harder part, is to also recognizing what I don't know, what I'll never understand. Because as much as we can try to align ourselves and put ourselves into certain situations, and as we should, what is equally as important is to also then acknowledge where I can't necessarily, there's only so far I can go. There's only so much I really will understand about the situation that you're in. And so what it's really up to me to be able to do is then ask you and hear from you and listen and stop talking sometimes in order to take some of that feedback and be able to process it and to be able to then learn from it and know how you can then serve someone where they are in the best and possible way. And I think that that sometimes is a lot hard. That is definitely a lot harder to do because while we try to relate and connect with people, we're still going to be a little biased sometimes in terms of how we then relate. When we actually stop and acknowledge what we don't know and instead ask the questions and take the time to listen, we are then evolving and we're growing and we can then better represent and better serve each other.
That's a good segue to my next question. You and I have discussed this, Gazelle, before, that sometimes managing millennials in our team can be very rewarding, yet can be a lot tricky because you have a lot to learn. That we almost have to, I'm calling baby boomers, we have to look beyond our usual stereotypes. What is your advice to A, manage millennials in your team, but also sometimes if you're working for them?
Yeah. And I would actually say, and Gen Z, right? Because to really think about it in the context, yeah. Millennials are getting older now.
Gen Z is fine. Yeah, exactly.
I have so much confidence and so much faith in the generation that is evolving in the workforce right now. Those that are moving up the ranks in their careers early on and as they're learning. I think that they, and I'm generalizing, of course, a lot of these individuals know that they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. They know that their role in their community, in their country, in the globe is much bigger than themselves. And they're trying to make a contribution so that they have a legacy, that they have something that they can leave behind. They may not think about it always in that context, but their purpose or what they're trying to kind of accomplish is in the context of wanting it to be something bigger than who they are, because they recognize that fundamentally we're all connected. And it's important to play our part and to connect with each other. So I think recognizing that that is something that is actually really good, and we all need that as part of the fabric of any really strong culture, is to be able to look at that as a gift to that environment and not to try to necessarily overly think it or try to think that it's, you know, oh, that must mean that they're not going to work hard because there's some purpose they're trying to accomplish and it's got to come with a message and it can't just be getting the job done. I don't think it necessarily needs to be that way. I think it could be that aim. I think it could be, hey, I'm here for a purpose and I'm here for trying to do something bigger than myself. And I know I can get the work done in a efficient, effective manner if you help me, if you coach me, if you bring me along. And I think for me, what's been really eye-opening is a lot of the Gen Z and millennials I've worked with have taught me so much about entrepreneurship, creativity, innovation, thinking outside the box. And I think they would probably say that what I've been able to supplement that thinking with is process and structure and governance and risk management and all of these things that help scale and help take some of that good and make it happen on a big and in a much bigger and more meaningful way, perhaps. So I think that part of what has been really helpful for me is to recognize that a lot of those gifts are exactly what our environments need in order to stay relevant and in order to be on the cutting edge. And a lot of what we also need is to take what we've learned along the way and not, you know, dismiss it per se, but make that also part of the conversation and part of the fabric. And together, you actually can come up with something really cool.
I so agree with you, Gazelle. My son is graduating from college this year, and I'm a fierce advocate of Gen Zers and people of his generation. I just feel so optimistic when I look at them and, you know, the sense of purpose that they have and this, you know, innovation and truly a better future ahead. So just makes me very optimistic every time I think of, you know, kids, or professionals, in that generation.
Yes. You know, we have a lot to learn from. And it's funny, like I have a couple of, I remember one of my very first, Daymaker provides, it's a workplace giving platform and it's a compassion platform that helps companies basically engage their employees in a really meaningful giving experience. And so we sell into companies or oftentimes talking to the head of HR and so forth. And early on, one of our very first Fortune 500 companies sent us an MSA and I had my red pen out and I was ready to like completely like slice it and dice it and all the different terms and conditions I knew we could not make. And our CEO was like, Gazelle, we need to sign that. And I was like, but we need to address this point and that point. He's like, but we also need to, he's like, don't forget, we need to sign it. I think we had this like really great, beautiful moment where yes, we needed some process. We needed to think about things in order to protect the future of our company as we were growing it. We also needed to become really easy to do business with because we were getting ready to sign our first Fortune 500 company. We couldn't necessarily get bogged down in things that really might not have been that important. So these are just kind of one of the examples of like things that I know going through, I took the step back, like, you're right. Sometimes we can figure out a way to make this work. And it's the best of that, both of those levels of thinking. Anyway, and I appreciated those. And while I'm not really working with Daymaker day to day anymore, I do know that the team, we kind of still can like giggle sometimes about the moments that they come up because I know I can oftentimes say like, oh, well, I don't know. Like I feel like a lot of times like they can approach certain situations with this level of thinking. And I like to think one of the things I've left behind is my red pen so that they can kind of take it out from time to time.
Very nice. It's a healthy debate versus each side being dismissive of the other.
And sometimes because of the experience that we bring, which is like, you know, decades of experience, we're tempted to make things more complicated when they can be just very simple.
Totally. Yes. Sometimes really less really is more.
Exactly. You know, I have a millennial son too, and he was an entrepreneur and he did really well in his business venture. And every time we would sit down and talk about it, he'd say, Mom, I know. Don't worry. I'll figure it out. And I'm like, why do you have to figure it out? I can tell you. But I had to learn that it's a process. They have to figure it out.
That's right. And that's where the growth comes from, right? When the growth will come from feeling the discomfort of figuring it out. And that's what we kind of all want. But it's sometimes hard when you're like, but I have the answer and I can get us there. Hold on.
Yes, exactly. And you can't resist.
You're listening to the Showing Up as a Leader podcast hosted by Wings for Growth. If you're ready to take the leap and build your wings on your way up, sign up for our leadership development program at www.wingsforgrowth.org.
All right, so we're going to do some fun rapid fire, Gazelle. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
And I know you said that surprised me, so we're going to surprise you. And I hope you're pleasantly surprised with our rapid fire questions. Okay, so the first one is, describe yourself in three words.
Happy, optimistic, hopeful.
Wow. Awesome. Great. Okay, the next one. What advice did you get that was the most rewarding for you in your career?
I got advice when I first became a mom, and I was getting ready to go back to work. And I got advice from a woman at Accenture who had already had a few kids, and she was a little more senior than me. And she said, don't plan past 6 months. And I'm slicing and dicing it a bit, but the gist of it was, you know, plan for the next 6 months. You're going to get overwhelmed. And she meant personally, not professionally, not talking about making your goals and where you want to be in 5 years. But as it relates to managing children at home, little kids, coming back to work, dealing with childcare, figuring out how that's all going to work. She was like, think about it in 6 months increments, because if you start thinking about it in a longer term than that, it can start getting overwhelming, and you're going to all of a sudden start solving for things you don't really know about. And it was such helpful advice, because it was not too much sooner than that where all of a sudden I had this one moment where I'm like, well, I've got childcare figured out now, but what happens when he goes to kindergarten? This was with like a 3 month old. I was worried about kindergarten, right? And so I think her advice of like, you know, plan for the next 6 months and as it relates to managing your responsibilities with your family. Because if you really start planning much further than that, you're going to get overwhelmed, and you're also solving for something that may or may not exist. So personally, that was something that I really continue. I even still till today with a high school and a middle schooler, I still think about that in many ways around thinking about, you know, how to plan and not get overwhelmed with what other situations might come up for them.
That's awesome. For me, it was a long time ago, somebody has said to me that moms are great leaders. And if you have not one, two kids, then you just get better at that.
Right.
Right. You know how to manage your life when you have two kids running around and you also have work. So working moms. All right. So the next question, I think this is fun. If you could talk to the president of the United States, what would you talk to him about?
Childcare. We need to have high quality, accessible, affordable childcare for our entire population. Yeah, I think that was what I would probably spend my conversation about.
I hope this podcast is getting millions of followers and President Joe Biden is listening to us.
Yes.
All right. So the next one, what is the most interesting thing you have in your purse that you would take it with you for an important meeting?
That's a tricky one. I think I would probably say, I don't know, it's more something I kind of take around with me a lot of places. I'm a big runner. And so I have this little device that I use. It's not even a device. It's a little satchel that I carry around with me to put my iPhone in, so that I can walk and run or move on the go and constantly be listening to something. I use it not just for running, but I also use it for other aspects of my life. So I feel like as I'm heading to a meeting or as I'm heading to anything important, I'm typically liking to put myself into a frame of mind. And so having that little thing with me allows me to have my technology accessible so that I can be able to get in that mindset. So probably not, you know, anything that I would barge into the meeting with per se, but it's truly what gets me into the headspace on my way there.
That's awesome. All right. And the last one, we're almost there. If you could win any award, what would that be?
So it would probably be an Emmy, because my secret dream is to have my own TV talk show and be able to be really good at it, that I'm going to eventually get an Emmy. But I think that ship may have sailed.
Thank you for being so brave and candid.
Absolutely. That's fun.
Awesome. And before I move on to the next question I have for you, Gazelle, I have to share with you the favorite advice that I got from you, shared by someone we know mentioned that to you. And that is about, you know, when it comes to big decisions, trust your gut. We had talked about it when I was at the cusp of making a big decision myself. And I valued that so much. And I think of that so often.
I love that. That makes me happy. Yeah. And you know what's interesting, Rupa? That was the same person who gave me advice about when it comes to trusting, when it comes to promoting you, there's the trust in our business. And do you have the metrics to back it? So we're fortunate to be surrounded by some really good allies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought as much when you mentioned that at the beginning of our conversation. Very nice. Moving on, Gazelle, you say one of your mottos, and it's very evident to me. You say, I would much rather be remembered as being kind than being right. Did you feel that way during your corporate career as well? And while you can be kind and tough, some people do perceive kindness for softness or mistake kindness for softness, right? Have you ever regretted being too kind or worried about how your kindness may be perceived?
No, definitely not.
Very good.
No one has also ever accused me of being too soft. I don't know what that really says. It's interesting, Rupa. I had an opportunity to present to some MBA students at NC State within about a year or two after I left Accenture. And I was presenting on leadership, and I was preparing this presentation, and I was talking to them about a couple of things about my, you know, reflecting on my career and all these things that I did. And when I was at Accenture, I spent a lot of time in mortgage banking. And when I started working in mortgage banking, our goals were figuring out how to address all the customer experience issues, how to make it cheaper, how to make it more efficient. All of the technology is antiquated. So when I fast forwarded and talked about what mortgage banking looked like as I was leaving Accenture and that was no longer my focus, well, guess what? We were still worried about customer experience. Technology was still antiquated. The process was still ridden with, you know, inefficiencies. And I had this moment where I was like, wow, if you're basing your legacy on widgets, like what you created, that can be pretty depressing because that needle might not move dramatically in your tenure, unless you're, you know, like a Steve Jobs or someone who's like doing something really dramatic, right? What will matter is how was I remembered? Was I remembered as kind? Was I remembered as the person that when you needed to take time off because a family member was sick, I hugged you? Will I be remembered as the person that, you know, kind of sat while you were in the trenches at 11 o'clock at night and your computer just shut down and you needed to recreate something that gave you grace? Like, that's what I want to be remembered as, because no one's going to remember me necessarily by how much faster and cheaper and better I made the process. What they will remember is whether I was nice to them.
Amazing perspective. Thank you.
And Gazelle, you come across to me, and Rupa has known you for a very long time, but in a very short time that I've known you, you come across to me as a very passionate person. And people say that you should do what you're passionate about. And we ask all our guests that how is practical is that, right? Sometimes if people don't even know what they're passionate about, discovering the passion is even harder. But more importantly, building a business or enterprise based on a passion, people say it's almost not possible because you have the bills to pay. Yet a lot of very popular or big businesses are built on passion. So to me, my question to you is, you talked a lot about, you know, finding the profit in passion. Give us some advice. Tell us how to do that. How do you strike the good balance there?
Yeah. So I think one thing is it's a shifted mindset. I think that we have lived in a society that somehow separates profit and purpose as though there are these two polarizing concepts that you can only have one. You certainly can't have the other. We certainly see this in the nonprofit sector based upon how we compensate nonprofit executives for the work that they're doing, the hard labor that they're enduring day in and day out. We don't necessarily put them on the same pedestal as we do in the private sector, but meantime, they're driving outcomes and results that I would say are super duper meaningful. And so I think part of this is we have to shift our mindset. We have to acknowledge that profit and purpose can and should exist in the exact same concept. I also think one of the other pieces of advice I have is there is usually going to be profit in almost any purpose. And there's probably going to be purpose in almost any profit. I do believe there's something to be said for if you come up with a really great idea and you're then trying to figure out how do you extend that in order for it to serve a underserved population, or how do you make that so that it addresses a societal issue? Put yourself in that situation so you can ask yourself those questions. Don't just take something at face value, assume you have a good idea and move on. Similarly, if you've kind of come up with a societal issue you really want to address, think about revenue streams that are going to help you figure out how to tackle that. There are definitely some models out there at those that have said like, hey, I really want to figure out how to address, you know, Tom's is obviously a really good example that a lot of people look to. Like Tom's didn't start because of the shoe mission. It started with a philanthropic mission, and selling shoes gave them the avenue to be able to do that. I mean, there are definitely ways that you can figure out how to do it. I think whether you start with profit or purpose, I think you have to then figure out how do you extend that in order to solve for the other. And I personally think if we all take the time in order to shift our way of approaching those things, it will happen. I think it happens with policy change. And I know that's a lot bigger level thinking about it, but I also think we have to advocate for policy that incents and promotes and rewards those things to coexist.
Yeah, that's really a good advice. But before we go for our last question, I definitely want to highlight and underscore what you said, Gazelle, that stood out for me because I strongly believe in it as well, is that you said that you didn't want to leave unless you were at the high point, right? And you talked about high point. Many times our mentees or we always want to think about leaving or finding another job when you're not doing well or the performance isn't going as well, or somebody has given you feedback and you're not sure about your job. We just immediately start updating our resumes and distributing that. But it is very important that you never leave a job when you're not doing well, if you can help it. So I definitely want to underscore that. And here is our final signature question. What's your advice to women leaders who are ready to take the leap and build their wings on the way?
Do it. Don't stop. I mean, I know that sounds overly simple. I actually spend a lot of my time working with women who have either been spending an extended amount of time at home, taking care of children, they're ready to return to the workforce, or they're the opposite. They have been, you know, in long-standing careers for a long time, and they're getting ready to want to maybe start their own 2.0. And you got to just start with some momentum. You have to actually take that very first step, because once you take the first step, the others will quickly come. I think the second thing is you got to tell your story. No one's going to tell your story better than you tell your story, and own that narrative. Don't let someone else come up and try to describe it in a way that works for them. You own that narrative and you tell that story. And that can obviously come in very tactical ways around your resume or around your elevator speech, but it also comes in the way of self-reflection. Take some time to think about what you want to be known for. What are the most relevant parts of your personality or your style or just your skills and capabilities that you think are really relevant to wherever you want to go? And use that as part of your story and be able to let that rattle off your tongue so that it's able to be the first thing people are going to think about when they hear and see you coming. But I think if you do, I think if you got to take that first initial step, I think you have to tell your own story the way you want it. And then really surround yourself with people who build you up, people who are going to help support you, who are going to give you advice, who are going to give you coaching, who are going to look at you when you're probably going sideways and bring you back to center a little bit. One of the things that I've been doing now with the independent consulting work that I do is to try to spend time, not just with companies, but really all with individuals who are kind of in this place of figuring out how they want to transition. And I think a lot of times my kind of first biggest thing is like, make sure you've got the people on your team who are there to help you along. Because oftentimes it takes having others around you in order to really propel yourself into that next phase.
There's a lot there. Great advice. Self-reflection, storytelling, building important connections, and packaging it all up and take it wherever there is an opportunity. Okay, that's a wrap. Thank you so much, Gazelle, for making the time. We really appreciate it.
Well, I loved it. And I love the work you guys are doing. I think this is so important. I think at the core of it, really, it does come down to if we mentor and support and enable one another, I mean, everything else will just happen. So thank you all for giving me the chance to participate. This was a lot of fun.
No, thank you. I keep spreading the good word. Thank you so much. And good luck to you too.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. We wish you the best as you take the learnings from this podcast and strive to show up as a leader in all those moments, situations, and interactions where you can make a difference. Build your wings and sign up to be part of the Wings program at www.wingsforgrowth.org.